The story of Joseph is sure an emotional story. I mean, you look up to age 17, Joseph was the favorite son of Jacob, the great-grandson of Abraham himself. Joseph was treated very special growing up. However, at the age of 17, all that changed when his brothers staged his death and sold him into slavery. Now at 30 years old, Joseph finds himself suddenly elevated to the heights of royalty. In the prime of his life, he becomes the second in command of all Egypt, one of the most advanced and wealthy nations in the world. His position would be similar to that of prime minister or someone with even greater power. What would you do if you had to handle a transition like that? To go from being a slave to a ruler would be hard all by itself. Well, the very first thing Joseph did after receiving his authority from Pharaoh was to go and inspect all the lands of Egypt. He didn't take the power he had and use it for himself, but he went right to work, focused on the job at hand, what the Pharaoh literally hired him to do. Joseph's close relationship with God didn't change, though. Good times or bad times. When Joseph was in prison, instead of getting mad at God, his family, or his situation, Joseph did three things to align his heart with God. It made him a great leader. Instead of getting angry and bitter, he developed a heart to persevere. Instead of pursuing revenge, he developed a heart to forgive. Instead of struggling with frustration, he developed a heart for God's wisdom. Those are three elements that he did as he pursued God and lived through tough times with his Lord. When we look ahead, when we look at the passage we're going to consider today, there's a great snapshot of Joseph's heart that we catch right at the end of Genesis 41. In verses 50 through 52, he's still true to God. This is Genesis 41, 50 through 52. Before the first of the famine years, two sons were born to Joseph and his wife. Joseph named his older son Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my troubles and everyone in my father's family." Verse 52, Joseph named his second son Ephraim, for he said, "God has made me fruitful in this land of my grief." When Joseph names his sons, he reveals his heart through each one of those names. The first one, God has made him forget his past troubles. What a gift. In the second son, God has made him fruitful in this foreign land that he lives in. It appears from these verses that even during his years of power and authority, Joseph has continued to strengthen and align his heart with the heart of God. You know, at times in my life, I can look back, especially in my younger years, I would get so angry sometimes, even bitter after being wronged. I would get downright revengeful, plotting ways to get back at people, creative ways, of course. That kind of thinking tends to block your relationship with God. Over the years, when I have thoughts like that, God would eventually come up to me and say, "Are you done now? Are you done thinking of all the bad things you do to those people?" And I'd say, "Yeah, I'm done." He'd say, "Great, now move on and leave that part to me." God does so much better job at leveling things out. I've learned revenge is not just not my business, it's totally God's business. It releases me from getting bitter, from allowing that hatred to grow. It even allows me to become thankful. Well, back to our passage. We're going to move on to Genesis chapter 42, verses 1 through 28. And we find Jacob and his rather large family in Canaan deep in a struggle for food, for life. They've just started the 7 years of drought. I don't know if they've been through the first one and going on to the second one, but somewhere in that time zone. And Jacob hears that Egypt has grain to be bought. So he sends his sons to Egypt to buy food. They really have little choice. He doesn't, however, allow his youngest son Benjamin to make the trip. In Genesis 42, 3 through 4, it reads, "So Joseph's 10 older brothers went down to Egypt to buy grain. But Jacob wouldn't let Joseph's younger brother Benjamin go with him for fear some harm might come to him." Obviously, the wounds of losing Joseph still haunted Jacob. It appears that he transferred some of the privileges granted to Joseph to his younger brother Benjamin. Jacob was going to protect Benjamin at all costs, and he wasn't going to apologize to anybody. The brothers arrive in Egypt, and we read in verse 6, since Joseph was governor of all of Egypt and in charge of selling grain to all the people, it was to him that his brothers came. When they arrived, they bowed before him with their faces to the ground. Wow. Stop here for a moment. Do you remember back when Joseph was young? And he shared with his brothers how the grain stalks, all the grain stalks around him bowed down to his grain stalks. That's the dream that Joseph had as a young man. And here, he's seen it happen before his very eyes. Do you remember his brother's response at that time? They hated him even more. You know, these brothers have to be extremely thankful that God has done a good work in their brother Joseph. They don't even begin to realize how important that is to them. It's interesting to me that Joseph, when he rose to power, didn't seek out his family. He didn't send spies to Canaan to see what they were up to. Instead, he focused on his job and what God had put him in a position of authority to do, what Pharaoh had hired him to. It's now been 7 to 8 years since Pharaoh gave Joseph that position. He had 7 years to make sure to take in all the grain that they would need for the 7 bad years. But Joseph doesn't know anything about his family, about the state of his father, or the state of his full brother Benjamin. In Genesis 42, verses 7 through 9, it reads, Joseph recognized his brothers instantly, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where are you from? He demanded. From the land of Canaan, they replied. We have come to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they didn't trust him. In Genesis 42, 7 through 9, Joseph recognized his brothers instantly, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where are you from? He demanded. From the land of Canaan, they replied. We have come to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. And he remembered the dreams he'd had about them many, many years before. He said to them, you are spies. You've come to see how vulnerable our land has become. I suspect Joseph had planned about what he'd do if his brothers ever showed up in Egypt. Given the widespread nature of the drought, and the visits by many people to obtain food, it had to be only a matter of time. Joseph was in a position to know anything and everything that he wanted at that time. Genesis 42, 10 through 14 reads, no, my Lord, they exclaimed, your servants have simply come to buy food. We are all brothers, members of the same family. We are honest men, sir. We are not spies. Yes, you are, Joseph insisted. You have come to see how vulnerable our land has become. Sir, they said, there are actually 12 of us. We, your servants, are all brothers, sons of a man living in the land of Canaan. Our youngest brother is back there with our father right now, and one of our brothers is no longer with us. But Joseph insisted, as I said, you are spies. Think about who they're talking to. They say they're honest men. You know, really, they're just victims, innocent. I think Joseph might have a different perspective of these men, his brothers. He knew them as ruthless, as murderers. It appears to me that Joseph truly doesn't know if Jacob, his father, or Benjamin, his brother, are alive. The following verses I'm about to read really speak to me that I think Joseph had really thought about someday meeting his brothers, because he gives them a test. And if anyone knows about testing, it would be Joseph. He wants to know their hearts, his brothers' hearts. In Genesis 42, 15 through 17, it reads, this is how I will test your story. I swear by the life of Pharaoh that you will never leave Egypt unless your youngest brother comes here. One of you must go and get your brother. I'll keep the rest of you here in prison. Then we'll find out whether or not your story is true. By the life of Pharaoh, if it turns out that you don't have a younger brother, then I'll know you are spies. So Joseph put them in prison for 3 days. And think about it. It had to be the prison that he was really familiar with. The prison that he imagined, that he lived in for many years. and essentially ran. And I assume in that prison that Joseph had listening ears. While they were in prison, he could listen to their thoughts. Joseph's test had to be about determining if they had changed or if they had gotten worse. What truly was the status of his family? Back in the land of Canaan, Joseph continues with this test for his brothers. In verses 18 through 20, we read, "On the third day, Joseph said to them, 'I am a God-fearing man. If you do as I say, you will live. If you really are an honest man, choose one of your brothers to remain in prison. The rest of you can go home with grain for your starving families. But you must bring your youngest brother back to me. This will prove that you are telling the truth, and you will not die.' To this they agreed." Finally, we're about to see how Joseph starts really hearing some of the heartfelt thoughts on his brothers' minds. It's surprising to me also that we start seeing the toll of their actions against their brother Joseph years before. The memory seems to be weighing heavily on their conscience. As they spoke in Hebrew, figuring they couldn't be understood by Joseph. In Genesis 42, 21 through 23, speaking among themselves, they said, "Clearly, we are being punished because of what we did to Joseph long ago. We saw his anguish when he pleaded for his life, but we wouldn't listen. That's why we're in this trouble." "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy?" Reuben asked. "But you wouldn't listen. And now we have to answer for his blood." Of course, they didn't know that Joseph understood them, for he had been speaking to them through an interpreter. You know, I can only guess the emotions that Joseph was going through. Sure, he was a prime minister of Egypt, but he was also a man who had experienced tough times, hard emotions, year after year. I appreciate how God gives us emotions, as hard as they can be sometimes. I mean, can you imagine living like Spock? Could you imagine what emotions do? They help us love others. They help us have feelings. They help us relate to people. They can also take us down hard trails if we're not careful. No, this experience had to be emotional and even surreal for Joseph. And we catch a glimpse of his emotions here in these next verses, verses 24 and 25. "Now he turned away from them and began to weep. When he regained his composure, he spoke to them again. Then he chose Simeon from among them, and he had him tied up right before their eyes. Joseph then ordered his servants to fill the men's sacks with grain, but he also gave them secret instructions to return each brother's payment at the top of his stacks. He also gave them supplies for their journey home." Joseph's plan was really to figure out what is the true status of his brothers. If you read between the lines, you can pick up his motivation. Joseph was actually being wise and careful as he seeks to figure out what is their heart. Who are they really today, years later? I wonder if he overheard something in the group that caused him to pick Simeon out to stay, because we're going to read he does just that. He doesn't wait for the brothers to decide. In verses 26 through 28, "So the brothers loaded their donkeys with grain and headed for home. But when they stopped for the night, and one of them opened his sack to get grain for his donkey, he found his money in the top of his sack. 'Look,' he exclaimed to his brothers, 'my money has been returned. It's here in my sack.' Then their hearts sank. Trembling, they said to each other, 'What has God done to us?'" What a wonderful and horrifying thing to discover, finding their money, then realizing it would appear they stole the grain. They must have been filled with gloom and disaster. It was just waiting for them in their future. They could feel the events happening around them, and they had no control. Seems like in our world today, it's when we're out of control that God can do some of his most effective work in our lives. The brothers' final words in this passage give us a clear indication of just what was on their minds. What has God done to us? How do we acquire the ability, the perseverance to forgive others and act wisely? Joseph developed his heart by pursuing God with everything he had, through the good times, and especially through the bad. Reviewing Joseph's actions over the last few weeks, we can see how Joseph aligned his heart with God. And I don't want to let these three points pass us without me coming back to them, because there's something we should all hang on to, we should grab. We should draw close to God so he can help us in these categories. The first one, James had a heart to persevere. The first one, Joseph had a heart to persevere. We read in James 1:12 in the NIV, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." It's an awesome thing to be able to have endurance and persevere through tough times, knowing that God has the best for those that belong to him. The second one, Joseph had a heart to forgive. Colossians 3:13, make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Probably the hardest part for me to deal with. When someone's done me wrong, I want to get back at them. The human side of me wants to reflect and push back at them. The same way they did me wrong, I want to do it to them. But God says, have you forgotten? I forgave you. You must forgive others. The heart of forgiveness means we let God deal with the justice to it and we move on. And number three, Joseph had a heart for God's wisdom. Psalm 111:10 in the NIV states, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding." I want to share a real life story of someone who was like Joseph, who suffered greatly, yet someone who put his focus on God and God's love. Louis Zamperini, his life is depicted in the movie Unbroken. There's actually two movies. The first one deals with the actual facts. His life was anything but boring. He could run a 4.7 mile. Very few people in the world can do that. He competed internationally, even ran in the Olympics. He became a World War II hero. He was captured and tortured for 2 years in prison, a prison camp right outside of Tokyo, until he was rescued by Allied forces. The original movie stopped there. It gave all the facts. The movie didn't depict what the book depicted, so a second movie was made by some Christians. I'm going to show you a 2.5 minute clip, an official trailer from the 2018 movie Unbroken, Path to Redemption. This gives, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story and shows Louis Zamperini's return home, his intense struggles, and how he found the answer through Jesus Christ in those struggles. Because Jesus Christ changed this man. Jesus Christ did a work in him as God had done in Joseph. In the very last scene of this trailer, we'll see a scene where Louis comes face to face with those who tortured him. Face to face with those who beat him down, who punished him, who killed his friends, who starved him while they ate in front of him. It really is a modern day story of Joseph as he faced those who did him wrong. How would you treat people that tortured and mistreated you? Let me show you the clip now.
Bless you, Louis. Welcome home. All of Torrance was praying for your safe return.
Miracles didn't save me, Padre. A couple of atomic bombs did that.
You're Louis Zamperini, aren't you? Thank you.
For what?
For preserving the free world for silly girls like me.
People from all over the country want to know if you're going to run in the London Olympics.
What's this?
If you're going to train for London, you have to do it right. Just go nice and easy, see if you can make it all the way around.
You think you can run a 4.7 mile again?
I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. I don't run to run. I run to win.
You will never escape me. Wherever you go, I will find you.
Are you sleeping well? You're having any night sweats or nightmares?
I just thought I'd be able to forget everything.
I want to go home.
There is no home.
Why is God silent? Why good men suffer? Why doesn't he stop the pestilence? Why doesn't he stop the wars?
You need help.
Here tonight, there's a drowning man. Just looking for some type of hope for the future. But there's a lifeline. Just reach out.
These men, they did terrible things to you. What are you going to say to them?
Wow, it's a very dramatic movie. His torture was real. And the memories of that torture and those hard years in the prison camp lived with him. He struggled with them. He couldn't sleep at night. It was tearing apart his marriage until he found Jesus Christ. It's when he found Jesus Christ, it changed his life. He was able to know how to let it go. I don't want to give you too much at the end of the movie, but I don't know how to tell you except, just like Joseph, Louis's heart changed too as he aligned with God. That last scene with the pictures of the former guards, the former soldiers of the Japanese army, he had to face them. This time he faced them as a changed man of God. He had to address them. And if you want to check out that movie, I have a copy, you can take a look at it. It shows what a man of God does when he's been renewed, when he's been healed. It's an awesome story. Let me close with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for the lessons that you have taught us through Joseph. Thank you for the lessons showing us how you develop perseverance in our lives, how you give us a heart to forgive, how you give us your wisdom to know how to make decisions in life. Help us not to take it for granted. Help us to seek it with all of our heart as we celebrate the love you have for us, the provisions you have for us, as we celebrate the forgiveness and grace that you've bestowed upon us. Thank you for allowing us to align our hearts with yours. In Jesus' name, amen.